Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening, good evening, and welcome to Raven Real Spill Radio. This is your girl, Raven the Serial Poet, coming to bring to y'all day 22 of the 25 days of Christmas, or night, or whatever you want to call it. I just want to take the time to say thank y'all for all who have been coming back and listening to the playback. I know you don't have to, but you choose to, and it is greatly appreciated. So before we get into this music, if you want to call in, the number is 515-605-9806, 515-605-9806. Let's get into this music, shall we?
Thank you. Thank you. Hello there, little ones, and big ones, and middle-sized ones. In fact, hello to everyone of every size and every shape. Listen closely to me. I will tell you three simple tales of Christmas while I warm my cold feet against this roaring fire. See the flames flicker. Don't stray too close to the fire, or you're liable to get burnt. But you can look into the flames from far away. Can you see pictures of Christmas within? I can. Makes me all warm inside, as well as outside. I hope it makes you think of Christmas too. And if you look closer, you'll see three Christmas stories that I have for you all. We begin with the first Christmas story of the Elves and the Shoemaker. In a tiny village called Tranquil Repose, tucked away in the land of make-believe, lived a hard-working shoemaker. The shoemaker owned the smallest shop in the village, where he made wonderful shoes. He was the best shoemaker that had ever lived. But as Christmas approached, he wasn't very happy. In fact, he was as sad as a church mouse that has lost its cheese. For a whole year, the shoemaker hadn't sold a single pair of shoes. The rent that he paid for his shop was due, and he had hardly any savings left, so things were looking very gloomy indeed. As Christmas approached, he could hear children singing Christmas carols outside in the street, holding lanterns that passed by his window like slow-moving shooting stars. The shoemaker knew that these children would go home to a roaring fire, a table full of food, and lots of presents around a big Christmas tree. He imagined what it would be like to be surrounded by family and friends, enjoying a Christmas dinner of a golden turkey, a steaming dish full of vegetables, and a jugful of chocolate brown gravy. His stomach rumbled, and he looked around at what he'd got this Christmas. Nothing. Nothing at all. The shoemaker's shop was very bare. All that he owned was a big old table where he made the shoes that he tried to sell, and an old wicker chair for his customers to sit on. That was it. There was no tinsel, or Christmas cards, or mistletoe, or a Christmas tree. The shoemaker sat at his table and looked at the last piece of leather he owned. Sadly, a whole family of rats had nibbled away at all of his other pieces of leather. He'd opened his leather box as Christmas was approaching, just so that he could make more shoes for people to buy as presents at Christmas time, and all he found were half-eaten pieces of leather. If he had made shoes from these, the holes would have let the rain in, and everyone would have had wet socks, or even worse, wet feet. So, with his last piece of perfect leather, he cut out a pair of shoes. The shoemaker had not eaten for several days, as he didn't have enough money to buy even a loaf of bread, and he was too tired to sew the shoes. He went to bed, leaving the shoe leather to be sewn the next morning. He blew out his candle, and the shoe shop was darker than the blackest night. In the distance, as he began to climb into his bed, he could hear the carols of Christmas and the church bells ringing. The next morning, when the sun rose bright and early, so did the shoemaker. He put on his apron and his glasses before returning to his table to sew the shoes. But when he got there, he was astonished to find that the shoes had already been made. there they were. He scratched his head and raised an eyebrow. Had he made a mistake? He was sure that he hadn't made the shoes before he went to bed. He looked around his empty shop, but could see no sign of anybody else. That's very strange, he thought, and he picked up the shoes and examined them. These shoes are the best shoes I have ever made, he thought, and I didn't make them. He laughed out loud, and just as he did, the bell on his shop door tinkled along with his laughter. A very grand gentleman, in a very smart suit, with a matching hat, entered the shoemaker's shop. He explained to the shoemaker that he was visiting from a nearby village, looking for a pair of new shoes to wear to church on Christmas Eve, and he hadn't been able to find a decent, well-made pair anywhere. The shoemaker showed him the new pair of shoes that had magically been made last night. The man smiled broadly and sat down in the old wicker chair to try them on. The shoemaker kept his fingers and even his toes crossed, hoping that the miracle shoes would be the right size. And guess what? They were! The happy customer did a little dance around the table just to make sure, and the shoes fitted him perfectly. He was so happy that he paid the shoemaker twice what the shoes were actually worth. The grand gentleman wished the shoemaker a Merry Christmas, raised his hat to him, and left the shoe shop. Quick as a flash, the shoemaker decided to buy two more pieces of leather with the money he'd been given. He cut out two more pairs of shoes. Feeling so hungry, the shoemaker also bought himself a loaf of bread and some cheese. He sat in his old wicker chair and munched on a slice of crusty bread and a chunk of the smelliest cheese. It was late when he'd finished eating, and the shoemaker fell asleep, content with a stomach that was full to bursting point, while snoring loudly in his faithful old chair. In the morning, when he awoke, he stretched, yawned, and climbed out of his chair, rubbing his eyes as he wondered if the events of yesterday had been only a dream. When he turned to the table, he knew this was no dream, because the two pairs of shoes that he had cut out the night before had been transformed. Perched jauntily on the table were two pairs of the most beautiful ladies' shoes he had ever seen. They were magnificent, with perfect little stitches, and the shoemaker couldn't believe his still sleepy eyes. As soon as he picked them up to take a closer look, the doorbell tinkled just like it had the day before, as someone pushed the shop door open and entered. The shoemaker turned to see who it was. Inside his shop were two elegant ladies wearing fine gowns that made the poor old man think that they must be very rich. The beautiful young ladies waved hello to the shoemaker, and he waved back. "We were sent here by our father, who said we should buy shoes for Christmas," said one of the beautiful ladies, and the other agreed. "And may I ask who your father is?" said the shoemaker. "Do I know him?" he asked politely. "You sold him a pair of wonderful shoes yesterday, so that he could walk to church on Christmas Eve, and he so loves them that he has sent us here to be fitted with shoes as well." The shoemaker could not contain his happiness and grinned as wide as his mouth would stretch. He now knew why two pairs of ladies' shoes had appeared by magic, and he showed the ladies the gorgeous creations that had been made overnight, and the ladies were as happy as the shoemaker. Without even trying them on, they both kissed him on the cheek and paid him twice the money he asked for. They skipped out of the shop and left the shoemaker leaning against the table, smiling away to himself and shaking his head in disbelief. "I still don't know who sneaks in at night whilst I'm asleep and makes these shoes," he thought. "I wonder if they'll do it again." That night he had bought enough leather for 8 pairs of shoes and laid them all out on the workbench before he went to sleep. When he awoke the next morning, there were 8 pairs of shoes made, all perfectly stitched and sewn together. The news of the shoemaker's lovely shoes soon spread far and wide. Many happy customers visited his shop over the next few days, who all wanted his shoes for Christmas gifts, sometimes for themselves, sometimes for their friends, and sometimes for their relations. Every night he cut out more shoes from leather, and every morning they would be sewn and stitched so well that sometimes he couldn't even see where. On Christmas Eve, he sat in his old wicker chair, with his larder full and the rent paid for the next year, and wished he could see how these shoes were made. So he decided that he wouldn't go to sleep. He would keep himself awake all night by sitting bolt upright in his wicker chair, which he tucked back into the shadows. And the bell on the church clock chimed 12 times. It was midnight on Christmas Eve. As the last chime sounded, the smaller bell on the shop door tinkled, and in ran 2 jolly little elves. They were a lot shorter than the shoemaker and a little rounder. The pair were dressed in woolly hats that were pulled down hard on their heads to keep the cold off their pointy ears, and their clothes were all torn, ragged, and old. They were so busy talking to each other, they didn't notice the shoemaker sat in his chair and skipped around the table to find the leather. The jolly little elves picked up the first 2 pieces of leather, pulled out needles and some thread from their pockets, and began to stitch the leather together to make the shoes. In no time at all of the leather had been turned into lovely shoes, and all the shoes sat neatly in rows on the shoemaker's table, and the elves skipped away as fast as they had arrived. The shoemaker smiled and was happy to see the magic that the elves had done. He relaxed in his chair and let out a really loud sneeze as he tried to think of a way to repay the jolly, hard-working little elves. They had, after all, saved him from starving and from losing his shop. The shoemaker had noticed that the elves had been dressed very poorly. "Those little chaps must be freezing in this cold Christmas weather," the shoemaker thought. "I will make them some fine clothes and warm stockings and shoes to show my gratitude." And this he did, working all through Christmas Day to say thank you. When he'd finished the last stitch, he laid out the suits of clothes on the table as the moon turned day into night, and sat back quietly in his chair in the shadows, hoping that the elves would come back one last time. Sure enough, as soon as the bell on the church clock struck 12, in came the busy elves, ready to do some more work for the shoemaker. When they reached the table, they were really surprised to find no shoes waiting to be sewn. In their place were two handsome suits of clothes, with stockings, shoes, and two fine new hats. The elves could not have been happier, and quickly slipped out of their rags and into their new suits. Delighted by their outfits, the little elves skipped happily off into the forest, singing loudly. One good deed deserves another, that's what we were told by mother. And every time a gift you give, a thanks is what you end up with. And the little elves slipped away, never to return. The shoemaker continued to make shoes, and he carried on being successful and happy. But every year, on Christmas Day, he would give a little thanks to the little elves that had saved his shop and his livelihood. And somewhere, amongst the trees of the forest that surrounded the hill next door to the shoemaker's village, danced two little jolly elves in fine and dandy suits of clothes, who, in their turn, gave thanks to the shoemaker for the best Christmas present they had ever received. Wouldn't be Christmas without gifts and thank yous now, would it? I hope you all say thank you when you get given Christmas presents. Do you know, I can feel a bit of a chilly wind blowing through my house. I think this next story might be a little bit scary, so you might want to hold someone's hand while you watch and listen to The Spirits of Christmas. Have you ever heard of a man named Scrooge? No? Well, I have. This is him now. Look at him sat behind his desk, counting his money and rubbing his hands together. Scrooge was a very wealthy man who'd spent all his life trying to make as much money as he could. He didn't care about anyone or anything else, and I'm sad to say he wasn't a very nice man to know. In fact, most people thought he was really horrid, but Scrooge didn't care. So long as he had his money to count from morning until night, the rest of the world could think whatever it liked. There was only one person who would put up with him, and that was his faithful clerk, Bob Cratchit. Bob was as kind and as generous as Scrooge was horrid, and he worked really hard for his miserly master. Scrooge sat next to the fire, in a comfy chair, counting his gold coins, while Bob sat on a hard, high stool at the end of the table, in the cold shadows, opening Scrooge's letters and trying to get him to reply to them. many were requests from Scrooge's own relations, who'd fallen on hard times, for help with just a few gold coins. But every time he refused. Sometimes orphanages would ask for help, looking after poor starving children, but Scrooge always said no, and not very politely either. Then, as Christmas came, poor Bob got very worried, because he knew he'd have to ask Scrooge for his wages to buy Christmas presents and food for his family. Bob sat on his hard stool, dreaming of a sizzling golden turkey and a flaming Christmas pudding, and being able to put brightly wrapped gifts under a beautifully decorated fir tree for his beloved son, Tiny Tim. Eventually, Bob plucked up the courage to ask Scrooge for the money that was owed to him. Scrooge didn't even look up from counting. Bob asked again. "Could I please have my wages, Mr. Scrooge?" Still Scrooge didn't look up. Bob asked one more time, very politely. "Can I have my money now, please, Mr. Scrooge, before all the shops shut on this cold Christmas Eve? I need to buy food for my family, or they'll go hungry on Christmas Day." Scrooge looked up from counting his money. He waved some of it in front of Bob. "Is this what you want?" he said. "Yes, please, Mr. Scrooge," Bob replied. "I have worked 8 hours a day, 7 days a week for you, and I need to have Christmas Day off to spend with my family. I hope that'll be all right."
"No, it isn't,"
snapped Scrooge, snatching away the money he had pretended to give Bob. "Why should you be at home with your family on Christmas Day? You should get your priorities straight. You must be here with me." Bob pleaded with Scrooge, and even invited him to spend Christmas Day at his house. But the mean old miser would have none of it.
"You'll work on Christmas Day, or you'll be fired," said Scrooge,
as he gave Bob 2 tiny brass farthings instead of the gold coins he was owed. Reluctantly, Bob took the farthings and set off to find what few bits of food he could for Christmas Day. While Scrooge continued counting his money, can you imagine poor Bob trudging through the snow and having to tell his family that there would be no presents this Christmas? Horrible, isn't it? Without any money, Bob couldn't buy a present for his young son Tim. Bob had wanted to buy Tim a brand new coat to keep him warm in the winter, but now he couldn't afford to. As the sun set on Christmas Eve, Scrooge was still locked away with his treasure chest, counting his money. And like every other night of the year, he fell asleep to the comforting sound of jingling coins. Then Scrooge awoke with a start and looked up to see not Bob Cratchit sat upon the hard stool, but instead a man dressed from top to toe in red, with a white beard and very black boots. Yes, you've guessed, it was Father Christmas. But he wasn't smiling like he usually does.
"Mr. Scrooge," said Father Christmas, pointing a finger.
"Yes,"
said Scrooge, gathering up his money and clutching it to his chest like it was a baby.
"You are a mean, nasty, horrible man. You would not give poor Bob more than 2 brass farthings for Christmas, even after he'd worked very hard for you all year, and that isn't fair. To make you see the error of your ways, I've come to tell you that when the clock strikes 12 at midnight tonight, you will be visited by 3 spirits, the spirit of Christmas past, the spirit of Christmas present, and the spirit of Christmas future.
And with that, Father Christmas left as quickly as he'd arrived. Scrooge was extremely surprised and was so worried that he started shaking like a leaf on a tree and wondered what on earth was going on. He thought it must have been a bad dream, but it seemed very real. Scrooge looked around nervously and began to count his money again. There was nothing Scrooge loved more than money, and it didn't take long for him to fall back to sleep. As the clock struck midnight, just as Father Christmas had predicted, Scrooge awoke. But not because of the chime, no, this time someone else was sitting on Bob Cratchit's stool, demanding that Scrooge listen to what she had to say. "I am the spirit of Christmas past," said the ghost, for that is what she was. "And I've come to help you see the true meaning of Christmas." Scrooge looked angry.
"I know all about Christmas," he moaned. "Everywhere shuts at Christmas. I have to spend a day without Bob Cratchit. I don't like Christmas," he said.
"I wonder why," said the spirit of Christmas past. And with that, she grabbed Scrooge by the hand and spun him round and round and round until everything became blurred. The next thing that Scrooge knew was that he was flying through the air, and as the clouds, sprinkled with magic dust, flashed before his eyes, an image appeared before him of a young man looking very sad. The ghost asked Scrooge if he recognised the unhappy fellow, but the mean old miser said he'd never seen him before in his life. But he was lying. He knew perfectly well it was himself, Mr. Scrooge, as a young man. "You do know him," said the ghost, "and you know why he's crying. It's you. And the beautiful girl who you wanted to marry turned you down to become the wife of a very rich man on a Christmas day long, long ago."
"But what am I saying?" asked Scrooge. "I can't hear, and I certainly can't remember."
The spirit of Christmas past waved her hand, and Scrooge clearly heard the words. "She loves me. She loves money more. She loves me. She loves money more." "Come along, Scrooge," said the spirit of Christmas past. "Let's leave your younger self to get over his pain. But you can see why you grew into someone who wanted money when he got older, can't you?" Scrooge frowned.
"Oh, that's a load of poppycock. In fact, it's complete humbug," he huffed.
Humbug was one of Scrooge's favourite words, and he used it an awful lot at Christmas time.
"That's not why I don't like Christmas, just because a silly girl didn't want to marry me and ran off with someone else on Christmas Day."
"Yes, it is," said the ghost.
"No, it isn't," shouted Scrooge.
"Yes, it is," said the ghost, grabbing Scrooge by the hand, and the pair were soon flying through the clouds once more.
"No, it isn't,"
said Scrooge, getting dizzier and dizzier, and dizzier. Scrooge was back in his room again, and lay asleep with his head upon his treasure box, cuddling his money as if it were a precious child. But all of a sudden, his slumbers were disturbed, as something, it felt like a sharp stick, was poking at him. Very annoyed, he looked up to see another spirit sat on Bob Cratchit's stool. This time, it was a fairy, like the ones you see on the top of Christmas trees, and it wasn't a stick she was poking him with, but her magic wand.
"Oh, no," said Scrooge. "Who are you?"
"I am the spirit of Christmas Present," said the new ghost, "and I, too, have come here to show you the meaning of Christmas."
"Ah, humbug," said Scrooge crossly. "Humbug, humbug, 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 humbug."
"There's no need for language like that," exclaimed the ghost.
"It's not swearing," replied Scrooge defiantly.
"No, but it's not very nice, and neither are you. Fancy not giving your hard-working clerk Bob Cratchit his wages, and refusing to let him spend Christmas Day with his family. Just look what you've done." And as the spirit of Christmas Present uttered these words, she took Scrooge's hand, and in a sprinkle of fairy dust, the pair were flying through the air, much to Scrooge's further annoyance.
"Now, where are you taking me?"
the mean old miser wanted to know.
"I want to go back to my money."
"Not until you've seen this." The ghost guided Scrooge to a dark window, where the two of them peered in at a very sad scene. There, in an almost empty room on Christmas Eve, sat Bob Cratchit's wife and his young son, Tiny Tim. The poor boy was shivering uncontrollably, and although his mother gently rubbed his shoulders to try and warm him, it was of no use. Then Bob Cratchit arrived, with no food or gifts for Christmas, not even a warm coat for the boy. All he had was a thin shawl, in which he sadly wrapped Tiny Tim.
"That's Bob, my clerk. I didn't realize he was such a poor man," said Scrooge, whispering.
"You don't have to whisper. They can't hear you," said the ghost. "But you must know Bob is poor, because you never pay him. All he wants is to put food on the table and keep his family safe and warm."
"Oh, but he invited me round for Christmas dinner. How could he afford to feed an extra mouth when he has nothing?" asked Scrooge.
"Because Bob is a kind and generous man," said the ghost. "He would give his last crumb of bread to help another, rather than be mean and nasty. He would rather give than receive."
"His son doesn't look very well at all. He's shivering with the cold," said Scrooge, worrying for Tim.
"Yes, I'm afraid he may be too ill to survive this Christmas, and because you don't pay him any money, Bob won't be able to get Tim to see a doctor or buy medicine to help him."
"Oh, no," said Scrooge.
"But why should that worry you?" said the ghost. "I'll take you back to what you love best." And with that, Scrooge and the spirit of Christmas Present took to the skies once more, until yet again Scrooge found himself asleep upon his treasure chest. When Scrooge awoke the next time, it was not because a kindly spirit was in the room. No, this time a chill ran up his spine, and the mean old miser realized that the spirit of Christmas future had arrived. Dressed all in black from head to foot, this ghost, which really frightened him, led Scrooge away from his money and once more into the sky, high above the clouds. They flew together over a dark graveyard, and the grey shadows of the tall headstones made Scrooge feel very uncomfortable, while all the while the spirit of Christmas future said nothing. Eventually, the pair stopped, and Scrooge stared in disbelief at the name Tiny Tim carved unmistakably on the gravestone where they'd come to rest.
"Oh, no, not Bob's son. Oh, dear. The winter cold must have taken him, and it's my fault. If I'd paid Bob his money like I should have, he would have bought a coat for Tiny Tim, and I wouldn't be looking at his grave."
Suddenly, Scrooge realized something very important. This was the future. It hadn't happened yet. It could be changed. Excited, Scrooge begged the ghost to take him back to the present so that he could show the world that he had learnt the error of his ways. This time, when Scrooge awoke from his treasure box, there were no ghosts in the room, and he could hear the church bells ringing out the glad tidings of Christmas morning. In a flash, Scrooge had collected together all manner of wonderful things, including a plump golden turkey and a flaming Christmas pudding, not to mention presents, mince pies, crackers, and even a beautifully decorated tree. It took a great many of Scrooge's golden coins, but this time he didn't care, and he had the Christmas goodies rushed around to Bob Cratchit's house. Nobody was more surprised and delighted at the arrival of Scrooge bearing gifts than Bob Cratchit and his family, and they welcomed him into their home. Scrooge had the nicest Christmas he had ever known. And when the day was over, he did not go back to his nasty ways. In fact, he became like a second father to Tiny Tim, bringing him warm clothes and good food so that he could become fit and well. Every Christmas after that, Scrooge always spent with the Cratchits, and the spirits that had visited him on that cold and frosty Christmas Eve never returned to haunt him again. And the only visits that Father Christmas made to Scrooge were to leave gifts under the beautifully decorated tree that he put up every year, which was a very good thing indeed.
Thank you.
Was a nice little story, wasn't it? Mr. Scrooge learnt that Christmas is all about helping others and caring about your friends and family. It can be hard sometimes when you've got lots of lovely Christmas presents to think about anything else. Remember to try and make it the happiest time of the year for everyone you know. Now I'm beginning to feel very sleepy. Perhaps it's time for bed. But hold on a minute. I promised you 3 stories, didn't I? We've only had 2. So, if you're still sitting comfortably, then I'll begin. Is called The Day That Santa Was Kidnapped. And if that sounds a little bit worrying, have no fear. Like all really good stories, it has a very happy ending. Now, we all love Santa Claus, whether we're small or big, young or just young at heart. And even nasty old Mr. Scrooge found out that Santa is a very good fellow to know. Some of you might have been lucky enough to go and visit Santa Claus in Lapland, where it's very cold and snowy. You've probably heard a lot of tales about Santa Claus, but did you know he's based on a real saint? Yes, that's right, Saint Nicholas, who was an incredibly kind man who lived a very, very long time ago in Turkey. It's a bit warmer in Turkey than it is here in Lapland, but for one poor family who lived near to St. Nicholas, it got very cold when they became terribly poor and couldn't afford to mend the broken windows in their house. St. Nicholas gave gifts of 3 bags of gold coins to the 3 daughters who lived there, and because he didn't want anyone to know of his generosity, he threw the bags of gold down the chimney, and they landed in the girls' stockings that had been washed and were hanging by the fire to dry. St. Nicholas certainly started something, and whether you call him Santa Claus, Father Christmas, or Saint Nick, one thing's for sure. We all look forward to him coming to visit on Christmas Eve, bringing gifts and good cheer to one and all. Come with me, down into Santa's cave, deep beneath the ice and snow, where he's enjoying a well-earned rest, snoozing and snoring behind his newspaper. Everything is ready. The parcels packed and labelled. You might even spot one with your own name on it, which would be very exciting. The reindeer are ready to pull Santa's sleigh with the presents in Santa's sack to places like France, India, America, Great Britain, and everywhere else you can possibly think of all around the world. Now, here's a question you might have wondered about. How does Santa get all of those parcels in his sack? After all, it would have to be a sack almost as big as the world itself to carry something for everyone. Here are two lovely new words for you. Santa's sack is dimensionally transcendental, and even the white-haired old fellow himself has trouble saying that. What this means is Santa's sack is much bigger on the inside than it looks from the outside, and no matter how far you reached your hand down into it, you'd never get to the bottom, which is very nice to know. But one day, it looked as if even a dimensionally transcendental sack wouldn't be much help to Santa when two naughty goblins decided to kidnap him. Santa Claus is usually busy getting ready for Christmas all year round, even when you're on your holidays. The reindeers can't take him anywhere when there's no snow, which is why he's got a great big red truck, so he can collect all the presents and store them up for Christmas time. Today, Santa's off to the forest to fill his sack with parcels, but there are two naughty little goblins who have got other ideas. Scaramouche Selfish and Griswold Greedy are two goblins who used to work for Santa, but they wanted to keep all the presents for themselves, which wasn't very nice now, was it? They especially liked tricycles, and they stole them whenever they could. But look at them. They're far too big to ride tricycles, and this has made them very, very cross. One day, Scaramouche Selfish and Griswold Greedy decided that it was all Santa's fault, and they hatched an especially naughty plan to get their own back. If they could kidnap Santa and steal his sack, the presents would be all for them, and even the best-behaved children in the world would get nothing. The naughty goblins were so busy making mischief that they didn't spot a robin in the distance, listening to every word they were saying. I expect you've seen lots of robins like this one in your own garden, and because of their lovely red breasts, they're very popular at Christmas time. Some people say that this is because there was a robin in the stable where baby Jesus was born, but back at that first Christmas without its lovely bright red feathers. As it got colder, Joseph left Mary and Jesus to find wood for the fire, but it took him a long time. Worried that the fire would go out and the baby get chilled, the clever little robin flapped his wings right over the embers of the fire until Joseph returned. The heat of the flames turned the robin's breast red, and as the legend goes, so it has remained to this very day. Well, returning to our story, the little robin that overheard the goblins planning to kidnap Santa flew straight to the big man himself and told him what Scaramouche Selfish and Griswold Greedy were plotting. The robin was very surprised when Santa just laughed and laughed. The next day, when Santa was out in his big red truck, he stopped in a clearing in the woods to load up his sack with some very special presents. All the time he was working, the naughty goblins were watching him and sneaking closer and closer to Santa. In the blinking of an eye, they grabbed him and tied him to a tree. Then they set to work on his sack of presents, tearing off all the wrapping paper as fast as they could. But can you believe it? All the time, Santa was rocking with laughter and chuckling away to himself. Scaramouche Selfish and Griswold Greedy were far too preoccupied to notice what Santa was doing, yet they soon realized that they'd been tricked. The goblins got crosser and crosser with every gift they opened, because Santa's dimensionally transcendental sack was full of empty boxes. And as all you clever folk already know, the greedy little goblins would never get to the bottom of it. As soon as Santa was happy that the goblins had realized that they'd been tricked, he simply raised his arms and broke free of the tree, because there's never been a rope made that can hold Santa Claus prisoner. By the time Santa had told the goblins that they were very naughty, Scaramouche Selfish and Griswold Greedy were really sorry for what they'd done, and started to cry. But Santa Claus is always kind, and after all, it was still summertime. As the goblins sloped off into the woods, Santa told them that if they could behave themselves very nicely until Christmas, there would be a present in his sack for each of them. One labelled Scaramouche and the other Griswold, so they could forget all about their naughty names and just keep the nice ones. Now I don't know what happened, because the goblins haven't been seen since. But I think that probably just for once, they did as they were told. Don't you? Very annoying if you're small when grown-ups say, in that we know best way, all good things must come to an end. Sadly, in the case of our Christmas stories, it's true. The big book of magic tales is closing for another year, and we hope you've enjoyed the fun. At my house tonight, it's Christmas Eve, and now all the stories have been told. There are still a few last-minute things to do. We always put out a glass of sherry and a mince pie for Santa Claus, and a carrot for his reindeer. Perhaps you like to leave him different things. But after that last story, I can't help wondering if he takes another dimensionally transcendental sack with him on his journey around the world, to put all the mince pies he can't manage to eat in, so he can take them home for later. One thing's for sure, though. We haven't got any time left for guessing, because you all know what will happen if we're not tucked up in bed and fast asleep by the time Santa Claus comes. So, as the fire dims, it's time to bid each and every one of you good night. Sweet dreams, and a very happy Christmas.
Okay, y'all, that is my time. I hope y'all enjoyed the show. Tune in tomorrow for day 23 of the 25 days of Christmas. Time is winding down. I hope everybody got all the food they need, all the gifts they need. If you haven't got your tree up by now, bucket. But before we get out of here, I'm going to leave y'all with my thought of the night. And my thought of the night is, don't beg, don't chase, don't even be needy. Relax. And when you relax, anything and everything that is rightfully yours will come to you. With that being said, love, peace, and blessings. Pray before you lay. I love y'all, and good night.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look at the 5 and 10. It's glistening once again with candy canes and silver lanes that glow. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Toys in every store. But the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front door. A pair of hop-along boots and a pistol that shoots is the wish of Barney and Ben. Dolls that'll talk and will go for a walk is the hope of Janice and Jen. And Mom and Dad can hardly wait for school to start again. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. There's a tree in the Grand Hotel, one in the park as well. It's the sturdy kind that doesn't mind the snow. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Soon the bells will start, and the thing that'll make them ring is the carol that you sing right within your heart. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Toys in every store. But the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front door. Sure, it's Christmas once a more.